This is RSVNB Update, episode 504, recorded Friday, February 13th, 2015. The Creepy Doll. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSVNB Update. I am Shane1288 here with everyone's favorite Earth.
Everyone's favorite Earth?
Oh, yeah. You know, you can only have so many Earths, right? And, well, we've only found one so far, and if we find any more, well, I guess you'll be in trouble, won't you?
They'll be the ones in trouble.
Yeah. Go on to them.
So just a moment ago, Shane forgot to change his language settings, so we had to restart.
Yeah, we started the show with the
change back into Canadian English.
Yes.
So,
anyways,
all this adventure here at RSVNB Update.
Yeah, and that's what keeps us around and keeps us humming and gives us the oil to, you know, lubricate the gears and keep moving on down the track.
Shane, you are such a robot.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, gears, come on.
Yeah, we oil the gears whenever it's time to get going. But anyways, so, combat. Something that you and I, you know, we aren't exactly, you know, the PVM or PVPing types, now are we?
Not particularly.
No.
Not bossing, anyway.
Well, I checked that part of this week's update out. But the first thing is responsive combat from the ninja team. Basically, what this equates to is that when you press a button, your abilities will trigger, and there will be no delay. And I don't know about you, but I'm very pleasantly surprised as to how well this seems to work, because...
Yeah, it works really well.
Because, you know, you have the 0.6 second game tick, and normally anything in RS, you used to have to wait for the game tick for it to happen, but this seems like it's instant, you know?
Now, have you tried, like, eating food?
No, that's a good point, but I assume food...
Okay, I'll try that right now.
Okay.
Well, that right there was instant. I don't know.
Fascinating. But
yeah, that seems to be instant.
And
oh god, I wish I had that with Nomad's Requiem.
And if I recall, I don't know, I don't really pay attention to the adrenaline bar that much when I'm needing to recover life points, but food doesn't decrease adrenaline now, does it?
I'm not sure. I just ate my last food.
Oh, okay. Well, somebody can correct me out there if I'm wrong on that.
I think it decreases it slightly.
Right. Yes, they did reverse that.
No, it doesn't. It does not. I found tuna on the ground.
I thought that was reversed in the patch last summer for combat, but I guess not. Anyways, in order to compensate for this, some of the ability cooldowns have been increased just to tiny little bit to balance combat out, so it's not overly fast. So it should, at the end of the day, end up being the same speed. Now, do you use Revolution mainly with this?
Which one is that? Is that the one where it uses the basic abilities automatically?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I use.
Okay.
I don't remember the name.
I found that in my testing this week that it's harder to notice this update with Revolution in play. It's much more apparent if you're just activating your abilities manually, I found.
Well, do you activate any abilities when you're using Revolution?
Well, if I'm doing Slayer, not really. But if I'm fighting the King Dragon, then yes.
I do. I use, excuse me, my primary weapon is a Cerodomen Godsword, so I use the healing attack on there, And right now I'm slaying Necreo, which have those irritating little death spawns. So I also have the Cyclone, I think it's called Cyclone 1, that hits everything in the square hurricane. Around you. It's Hurricane?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Hurricane. Hits everything within one square of you, and since they have like 500 health, they just die. So that's mm-hmm. really useful. And they activate instantly.
Yeah,
and the other ones activate as soon as their cooldown is done.
Yeah, and I mean, I never really thought about it with the Cerodome and Godsword, that something like that would be truly game-changing, I think, if you have a Cerodome and Godsword, and it's boom, right away. So it's very nice. Now, I will say that in doing this, combined with Queen Black Dragon, my melee gear and whatnot, I did notice a speed up in general in terms of how quick I was able to respond to, you know, say, if there's one of those tortured souls that comes around, it's easier to, you know, activate the ability and maybe kill the soul off before it's able to do anything if you can't avoid the cloud that it spawns. So it's definitely nice in that regard. Now, some people were saying that they do not like this update because the delay after the fact is the benchmark of combat, because if there's a bit of a delay after the increase in the abilities, apparently that's, you know, increasing the amount of time it takes to get kills. I honestly think that's just psychological.
Wait, what?
Yeah, there are people out there who don't like this update because of the increased cooldown times, and they're feeling that extra cooldown time because they see the ability to activate on their screen, but they got a couple extra seconds, one or two, of the cooldown, and they're feeling that as though it's impacting negatively in their combat.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's just a psychological thing, because in reality, you're saving the time before the ability activates. Because it was a good tick before, you know.
I don't think you can make PvP communities happy.
No. And
they don't like it the way it is. They don't like it after it's changed. You can't win.
And the thing is, I don't think at this stage of RS3 we're focusing on a PvP community, you know, that would hang around World 18, Duel, and low-level Wilderness, that sort of thing. The staking community, for example. I don't think that's what the focus of PvP needs to be today. I ultimately think that we're going to be looking at a new generation of PvPers, and those are going to be the people who can make the combat system work for them, and already have the optimal skill setups for whichever boss they might be fighting, whether it be the, you know, Tormented Demons or Corporeal Beast. Combat education starts with Slayer, and then it ramps up to PVM, and then of course you take it to real life people with PvP. Now, I don't think we're at the Holy Grail yet, where we're going to have truly responsive combat and you're not needing to wait on the server and, you know, the low tick rate, but I think this definitely takes us a step in the right direction. So, overall, it feels faster to me, and it's a welcome change, and it's something that I personally have been waiting for quite some time when it comes to combat, because the number one complaint I've always had with, you know, bossing or something like that is it feels like I was waiting forever for a prayer to change or, you know, an ability.
Yeah, I haven't. Did you test any, like, prayer switching?
No, I didn't, because I've never really been a fan of prayer switching in terms of combat, so it's not something that came into my mind, but it would be a good thing to put on the action bar and see what happens.
Mm.
Because if you said food seems instant, it would make sense that maybe prayer should be made instant as well.
Yeah.
Can you flash a prayer on me quickly?
Yeah, that seems to be instant. I mean, I of course, it displaying as instant and it actually being instant are certainly different things, but they've made it appear that to be instant. So,
and you know, if you make it appear to be instant, what's going to happen is you press the button on the client to activate Soul Split or something, the icon will appear above your head and the light will light up. The signal will go to the server, and then by the time it gets there, it goes out on the first tick after you press it. That's truly where the improvement comes in. And then the boss calculations are able to be done in a better way on the server to protect yourself. So I guess that makes sense. Very nice indeed. There's actually a video up on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/rsbmbstaff, a preview of this, just, you know,
nice
fighting
plug.
Some black demons and whatnot. So if you're not able to actually get out there, you can go have a look-see and see how it feels for yourself by watching the video. Granted, you won't...
That's got to be edited out.
Yeah, I just received a very odd message from you on Skype. Anyway,
you're the one hating on the black man, Shane.
I said black demons.
You're hating on the black man, Shane. You're bringing him down.
Alrighty,
pressing him.
With that being said, youtube.com/rsbmbstaff. You can find the preview right there.
Woo!
And of course, also in this update, a whole bunch of NPCs have been made aggressive once again. What did you vote in that player power poll?
Yes, I think.
Okay. Some of the NPCs are lesser demons, greater demons, black demons, that's why I went there, banshees, mighty banshees, aberrant spectres, lizards, desert lizards, small lizards, caressed, harpy bug swarms, skeletal wyverns, brine rats, mutated blood velds, dark beasts, hill giants, fire giants, and moss giants. And of course, the same rule has always applied, where if you're double the combat level of the creature, it will not appear aggressive for you. Or
wait, is it double or double plus one?
They said double, so I'm assuming that is what it was changed to this time, because it used to be double plus one. Which,
very interesting.
Which, I mean, is simpler. You know, it's just double, and you don't need to say the plus one.
I guess.
Yeah. And of course, if you're in the area for longer than 5 minutes, things will go non-aggressive as they always did. And
didn't it used to be 20?
Yeah, it used to be much longer than five. So, I mean, 5 minutes, I guess, but 5 minutes isn't too long, is it?
No, it's really not.
So. Kind of disappointing, but. Anyways,
it's better than none at all, right?
Yeah, and you know, when this update came out, I said that they should make everything aggressive so that you go into an area, everything will come at you. So imagine have like all the Iron Dragons and Steel Dragons and the Brimhaven Dungeon come at you.
Nope.
No?
Everything's multi-combat still, right?
Yes.
That's still a thing?
Yes.
Yeah,
and that's why they mentioned that, you know, you can only have one coming at you automatically, but you can take on as many as you want.
Oh, so all of them won't attack you?
No, only one.
Oh, okay. Didn't it used to be all of them would attack you, though?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
See, in that way, it feels kind of like it's a halfway update, because if it was everything going back to exactly how it was, it would be everything attacking you, whereas now it's just one. So, I don't know. But nonetheless, I think this is better than having everything appear non-aggressive to you, because if you think about it, everything being non-aggressive basically means that, let's say, Jagex was to add a new primary resource into game, and it was surrounded by combat creatures. Well, if they were non-aggressive before, you could basically farm this thing without any trouble. Whereas now you'll actually have to deal with aggressive NPCs. So I think overall it's a net positive. All right, so is there anything you'd like to add pertaining to monster aggression before we move on? Because it seems, you know, it's a simple update, but there's lots of ramifications.
The list seems a lot shorter, or not seems, it's definitely a lot shorter than all the monsters that were aggressive in the past.
Yeah, because I distinctly remember Hellhounds being very aggressive.
Yeah, I don't know why they did. I don't know why they wouldn't put it back the way it was, where just about everything was aggressive.
Yeah, everything divided by two, or divided by 2 plus 1, is probably what they should have done. But, I mean, if you look at these are the Slayer creatures, and these are also the creatures where resources hang around in game. So I guess it makes sense to make these ones aggressive, because if you think about it, if someone is if someone's level 6, for example, and there's a rat, does somebody who's cutting wood in Varrock really want to get attacked by a rat?
I guess not.
So I guess there's logic in that. All right, well.
Oh, but Mugger level 6, though. That was for the bots, right?
Yes, yes. Oh, Mugger level 6 was an NPC that wandered around the yew trees inside the Falador castle, and, you know, would be the NPC that would attack the bots. Of course, you know, the bots eventually outsmarted Mugger level 6, but nonetheless, I guess we don't need that.
I wonder if he's still there today. I'm going to go look.
Ah, the detours we take at RSBNB update to, you know,
this is important. This is important.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
We need to go out in the field and research, Shane.
Now,
anyway,
well,
I'm glad to get out of that damn Slayer Tower.
Like I said, I went to the Queen Black Dragon and spent a half hour there, and I'm proud to say that I got 1.2 million in GP from just stuff that I got there. So the
not as good as Paul.
Yeah, well, yeah. If he wanted to talk about that, he could come on the show. But
no.
Basically, what happened is
there's no Mugger level 6 at the Varrock Southwest Mine. No.
I thought he was by the yew trees in the north. No?
In the north?
Yeah.
Like above the castle?
Yeah. I thought that's where he was.
I don't remember there ever being one there.
Oh. All right. Well.
Well, anyway.
Well, there's your answer on that. Patch notes. Always interesting when these come around. This week, a couple of ninja fixes to throw around. One of them fixing the ports update from a couple weeks back. Players can now close the player port ship customization windows with the escape key. Whereas, you know, beforehand, that would actually bring up the login screen and just end whatever you were doing at port. So that was unexpected action.
Oh, that was an annoying thing that happened. I do remember that. I just ended up accepting it because Jagex.
Yeah, we accept lots of things and then move on. And that is the nature of rapid game development. World Hop interface now shows more information on activities. Players wanted an activity column, so that's been added. So
that looks pretty nice. I like that. And you can toggle it to members only worlds and loot share only and non loot share only. I like that.
You know,
really good.
I initially said we didn't need this update, but I think I would probably use it if it had ping on it.
It's useful.
Or maybe even just an orb, you know, a green orb if ping is good, yellow if it's iffy, and red if it's no go.
No.
All right.
Too much clutter, Shane. Come on.
Yeah. That's
you don't
why.
Like your interfaces cluttered.
Exactly. That's why I've actually been using the Magic Mouse a bit, but we can talk about that later.
Ugh.
Players will no longer disconnect while training Herblore if their familiar expires while holding Herblore supplies.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah, it's really something that, you know, you don't expect when you are doing something as simple as training Herblore, and oh, this, you know, boots you out of the game. So shows that even in 2015, we can have little glitches like this in Jagex land. Just thankfully none
in Jagex land.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully, none have resulted in massive amounts of death and destruction.
Hey, I found a Mugger level 15 in Port Sarum.
Oh, that's 15. That's not as amazing as 6.
Mm-mm. There's a Highwayman level 11 up north.
I see. But
no, okay. Mugger level 6, everyone.
Hmm.
A sad day indeed.
Do you know what this is about? The creepy doll will no longer attempt to play an animation on a player in combat.
I don't know. I read that and I was like, what? Let's look. It's...
Is that from the horror Halloween quest?
Obtained by using ruined essence on Brother Celerity in Edgeville Monastery. It may be interacted with to prompt a message saying you shake the doll briefly, nothing seems to happen. Interacting with it while near a player causes a message saying as you manipulate the doll, player begins to move strangely to appear in your chat box. And the player will perform an emote similar to Puppet Master with you feel an unnatural power take control of you appearing in their chat box. Trying to interact with it again soon after it causes a message saying... The unusual magic has seems to have left the doll, for now. But in approximately 5 minutes, it will revert to its original state and can be used again.
I see. Hmm.
What?
Well, where's the doll from? I mean, was it a quest prop or something?
Ruined essence can be obtained by using a nearly boiled egg... Obtained by using an expired spin ticket on Wizard Gold on Kipple Nano after completion of Heart of Stone. How in the hell?
How do you find that?
What the hell?
Like, this is like a Friday the 13th RuneScape Easter egg. Oh my god.
What?
Wow, there, if you Google creepy doll, there's a picture of creepy dolls. I meant to type RuneScape, but anyways. All right. Well, shall we get back on track? Kind of, maybe?
I guess so.
One final thing from me before we move on. The captain's log can now be added to the pocket slot. And you can perform all the actions of the captain's log without removing it to your inventory.
Woo!
I like that. Okay. Anything else from the patch notes for you?
No, that and the creepy doll were really all that I had questions or I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Wow. Release date of the creepy doll was February 2nd, 2015.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go get one right now.
Okay, you do that. Moving on, Jagex made another attempt at the drop this past Sunday, but was unable to continue due to reasons of a DDoS attack or distributed denial of service. What do you think of this? These people just DDoSing Jagex for, you know, no apparent reason.
Okay. No, that was my thought.
All right. Well, this has moved Jagex to ask the players for assistance in this. If you have any information about the DDoS attacks or have any idea about who is behind them and could assist in the prosecution, yes, we are talking prosecution here. So this is a major thing. If you know anything about these, definitely do talk to Jagex. You can send them an email to tipoff@jagex.com. tipoff@jagex.com. It's really unfortunate that Jagex is trying to do something, you know, unique and groundbreaking in terms of the game, you know, having a massive game show essentially and broadcasting it simultaneously on Twitch. And, you know, there's someone out there, who just feels the need that, oh, we're not allowed to have this. So I don't know. It is possible to defend against a DDoS, but it's not something that companies want to do because it's so expensive. So you really got to wonder what kind of people are out there doing this, and hopefully they just get bored and stop. And Jagex finds them and, you know, nails them to the wall and extracts every little penny out of them. But that's me on the DDoS.
So, an aside, I know that Cloudflare is, yes, like an anti, there's something that's supposed to help prevent that. How does that work?
Basically, what happens with Cloudflare is that you sign up with them, and then every amount of traffic that you want to run to your website just goes through Cloudflare instead. So in essence, it works like a big proxy server, except in the reverse. So you would keep your IP address of your server private, and Cloudflare would know that. Then when you sign up a domain name for your website, like runescape.com, somebody types in runescape.com to their browser, they would get the Cloudflare IP address, and then Cloudflare would handle sending them to the server in a controlled manner that doesn't kill the server.
Hmm.
And once again, Cloudflare works for websites, but I don't know how well it would work for a game.
Yeah.
And you know, they got
it just shifts
the load.
The load.
And the only,
I'm sure that's really expensive though.
Yeah, yeah. Because the only real way to combat a DDoS is to throw a bigger pipe at the server.
Yeah.
But Jagex is going about this in a number of ways to, you know, minimize the impact on the players, starting with the grave timers. This is a temporary change until the death rework. Minimum of 30 minutes now, if you die.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
What's going to go on in this death rework?
Well, the death rework is something that they've been wanting to do for quite some time, and it's not necessarily inspired by this DDoS attack and the network problems they've been having. Basically, the way it's going to work in a simple explanation is when you die, your items and whatnot are going to be sent to death, and you'll have 3 days to go back and get them. And now when you go to death, there's going to be items that are always going to be saved, like your auras and runes and whatnot. There's going to be items that you can lose, items you can save, and then ones that are protected, and these are saved for you for free. Those are the three that you currently keep. So basically the idea is it's going to be a grave system that lasts for 3 days, and to get it back, you just pay money. So if you want to get everything back, you can just pay a fee, and you'll have it all back as if you never died. And if you don't want to pay anything, you will keep the three items that you normally keep, and you'll just carry on your normal way of playing.
So the other stuff will be destroyed?
Yes.
Ooh.
So
like, you die, you gotta pay money if you want to get it all back. You can't...
Exactly.
Exactly.
You have three items, you know, same thing. You can have three or four items. You choose which ones you keep. Those ones you get back for free. Anything else you need to pay. And then, of course, lost items. So in the example they give here, the lost items are an inventory of monkfish. An aura is saved. And the case here, the player automatically keeps their rune boots, Barrow's gloves, and dragon defender, whereas they need to pay to get back their dragon scimitar, rune plate body, rune plate legs, rune helmet, and a superset.
And how How is the price determined? Is it a flat rate per item, or is it a percentage of how much it's worth? Or
it's a percentage of how much it's worth.
Ooh.
And
you so, know, can you pick which items? I guess it would pick the ones that would be most expensive to pay to get back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
the example given, and keep in mind, this is all still preliminary, could change by the time it hits release. But if an item is valued up to 10K, it'll be taken at 15%.
Okay.
10 to 50K, 10%. 50 to 250K, 5%. 250K to 1 million, 2%. 1 million at 10 million, 1%. And 10 million plus, 0.5%.
So 10 million.
1%.
Oh, so that's like 100K, right?
Yeah.
Math,
yeah.
Right?
I think so.
For something that's 10 million? Okay. That's not bad. That's not bad.
I mean,
that's entirely reasonable.
Yeah.
And you have 3 days to get it back, so.
Yes. And, of course, you know, you'll also have for the degradable items. So, for example, you can have items come back to you either degraded, or you can pay to have them come back not degraded. So that's going to be interesting, you know, for things like barrows and the ports armor and level 90 weapons. Because right now they just lose a set of value and there's not much you can do about that. You know, my only complaint about this is the old system was simple. There needs to be a simple way to explain all this. I mean, in the interface. Yes, the interface is simple, but how much of this price that I need to pay is coming from each item? It would be nice, you know, to have some sort of breakdown on that so it's easier to choose. That is my only concern, that it's not going to be as simple to explain.
Well,
but I don't know.
Anyway,
we'll have to do like a video on this or something, and we'll have to go die, and somebody will have to lose some items. And no. I did not volunteer for that. I did not volunteer for that.
You just volunteered, Shane.
Yeah. Anyways.
You just volunteered.
Yeah.
You're going to die, Shane.
No.
Anyways,
before we move on, there's an example here. Someone with level 90 Drygor weapons and ports armor, a total death value of 189 million. To reclaim the full set would be 1.5 million. For three items, protected 860,000 GP. And if you have a grave discount, you'll get 817K rather than 860K. So rather than increasing time, the gravestones are going to increase the discount that you get.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that very much.
So if you have the Royal Dwarven gravestone, the best gravestone there is, you'll get a 5% discount.
All right, so going back to the creepy doll, I used the expired spin ticket on Wizard Goldberg, and he's telling me, "The sign! Take this, brother, and guard it well." He takes the ticket and hands me a nearly boiled egg.
And what do you do with this egg?
Well, I'm gonna find out. So,
could this be the beginning of some mini-quest or something?
I guess it is, just to get the creepy doll. But, eh.
All right. Interesting.
I'll be giving updates as we go through the show. Don't worry.
Righto. So, Rune Labs, ideas are open for February, and February's stipulation is it has to be small-sized or less. So this is the Harbingers of Tuska, Skill Chompas, or the Let Them Eat Pie quest as an example of the size they're looking for. I don't even remember Let Them Eat Pie.
I don't either.
Anyways, So you can submit your ideas. I went through them and I noticed something here.
There's an herb bag. I like that.
Okay.
That's all right.
Now, is that going to be your supported idea?
No.
All right.
My supported idea is a trimmed quest point cape, but it has an M with a crown on it. Shane, does that mean that it's been approved?
Well, it means that it's already been voted upon by the players and lost, because...
Are you kidding?
Yes. I mean, no, I'm not kidding.
For sake.
Basically, what happened is Jagex reset the support count on every Rune Lab idea that was in there.
Oh, so that's why they left stuff in. Oh, yeah. Okay. Now that decision makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess so, because if they fit this, then you might as well still have it. But of course, support counts are reset, so that'll need to build up support again. Currently, my supported idea is actually the top supported idea for February so far. That is to fill the Lumbridge Crater with water.
I like number 6. Someone to collect our daily free stuff for us.
So free stuff plucks wasn't enough?
That's... I don't know. I don't know. I'll support that. We'll see what happens.
All right.
But my officially supported thing is trimmed quest point cape.
All right. Once again. Yeah, I think that'd be a good one to come in here. I mean, the reason the Lumbridge Crater filled with water is, you know, this whole first world event was so long ago already. We're coming up 2 years on it. So I just think it's time, you know, to move on.
No, but it's a great place for Jagex to put every single event they're ever going to have ever again.
This is true. It also serves as a gathering place, you know, for the staff.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great place.
There's lots of space, but I mean, I just think a lake
what would you do with it?
A lake would look nice. I mean,
yeah, it might look nice, but it's going to be radioactive or something. Net.
Why?
I don't know. Did you see what happened? Everyone blew up or something.
But I mean, this could be the start of the sailing skill on a lake. But no, I mean, we got to evolve the areas at some point. Maybe an idea somebody out there wants to submit would be to clean Edgeville up after Ritual of Majorat. That's been quite some time.
I don't know.
All right.
Have we fixed Edgeville yet?
No, that's what I said.
Can we clean do that, Edgeville, please?
Yeah, that'd be a good one for somebody to submit. Anyone out there listening, go for it and we'll talk about it.
All right, I'm doing that right now. I'm doing that right now. How do I do this? Add idea.
Is this going to be your supported idea, or are you still going with the trimmed QP kit?
Technically, but... all right, add a new idea. Fix Edgeville. All right. And then what do I say for the description?
Keep it short and brief. But you'll have to
convince
people
as to why. That's a terrible description. How long ago was that quest where Edgeville got destroyed?
Ritual of the Majorat, 2011. September 2011.
It's been over 3 years since Ritual of the Majorat. And Edgeville is still on fire. Now, I'll figure this out.
All right.
We'll put a link to it in the show notes.
That we will. And we also got another community submitted idea that you guys can go look at and support from the RR Man. An enhanced dragonfire shield to come from the rune dragons. So he would like an enhanced Dragonfire Shield that eats existing Dragonfire Shields to gain 20% charges, and could have an AoE special, like maybe a Dragonfire AoE that boosts the defense of your team or allies in combat. This would help make shields more desirable and also boost the price of those classic dragon visages, making dragons more popular to fight once again.
Yay.
And you know, he does have a point. What's the point in using a shield these days, right? You just DPS anything to death and
Super anti-fires.
Yeah, so there's no point to shields. And I think if you maybe give the shields a bit of a combat perspective, that might bring some people over. So have a look. Support the RR Man's idea. Here's another idea here. A rather silly one. Every day you will get 200 mil. You will get 200 mil every day.
How many supporters does that have?
Thank you, that is all. One.
One.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Someone also wants a Meg mini quest. All right.
No.
Well, there's our Rune Labs ideas for February. I am supporting the filling the Lumbridge Crater with water. Reed is supporting the Trim Quest Point Cape in addition to his idea of cleaning up Edgeville. And, of course, we got our man's enhanced Dragonfire Shield. So if you guys have been working on a Rune Labs idea and you would like us to talk about it on the show and bring some attention to it, you can send that to either Earth or myself on the RSBNB forums, and we would gladly talk about your idea.
I don't know if that's going to be appropriate for this month. We'll wait until there's a medium.
Yeah, that's true. Cleaning a city is no small feat.
Yep, it's no one small favor.
No.
You get it?
Yes, I do. Anyways, it's Valentine's Day when you guys are listening to this, probably. And as we've come to expect, Treasure Hunter has a Valentine's Day promotion. What?
As we've come to expect.
Yeah, of course, right?
I like it.
Because, well, Valentine's Day, everyone's going to be playing RS on Valentine's Day, right?
Oh, yeah. Everyone who plays RS is going to be playing RS on Valentine's Day. I think that's what you mean.
Yes, that's what I meant. Anyways, there's a whole bunch of new rewards this year if cosmetics are your kind of thing. They got two previews of the emote. Efficiency and no more. I don't exactly get what's happening in efficiency, but anyways... And in No More, this player is throwing away a Cupid. So.
I guess. Efficiency under love.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, neither do I. But the main thing I wanted to mention with this year's Valentine's Day update is that the rose petals, that is the item that is used this year as currency, can actually be traded on the Grand Exchange.
Oh boy, so it can... put all of these irritating... I can put all these things that I'm getting whenever I'm doing stuff and sell them for money.
Yeah, they're going for around 9.9K currently.
Oh, sweet. Money. I like it.
Yeah, free money. And, I mean, there'll always be someone who'll buy something like that. I mean, there's people who like cosmetics, so I guess that's okay.
I like it.
I mean, it's not like someone's buying a bond or anything, but I just thought I'd mention that since, you know, previously you weren't able to sell them, and 9.9K for, you know, just doing a farming run, you say you get 15 of them, that's a nice amount of money right there. 150K almost.
All right, so I've gotten Kipple Nano... and I'm giving him my nearly boiled egg. Without warning, Kipple Nano takes the egg from you and tries to stuff it into a storage compartment. Hold this, please, Master. My pockets are full. The little golem hands you a strange pile of rubble. Eggs safely stowed, Kipple Nano shows no intention of reclaiming its former cargo. Upon closer inspection, the rubble appears to have once been Runescence. Its new form factor suggests a very troubling interior to Kipple Nano's pockets.
Right.
So?
And is that the extent of the involvement, or?
This part, yeah.
All right. Interesting to see where that'll go then.
Yeah.
And I don't think this was mentioned in the patch notes 2 weeks ago when this came out, so very interesting. Indeed. This week's behind the scenes video is a preview of what we can all expect for Game Blast 15, which is, of course, happening next weekend, coinciding with the Double XP weekend. So you can watch this video, learn a bit more about the charity special effect, and see some footage from last year's Game Blast. So I think they said they raised $44,000 over the weekend last year, so that's no small feat. Hopefully we'll do better this year.
Woo!
Alrighty. Well, as you guys probably heard last week, Paul has returned to RuneScape, and I mean, he is thoroughly enjoying his time he's spending on games, so much so that he did a clue scroll and is now almost a billion GP richer than he previously was. But nonetheless,
and he won't give me a single coin.
Yeah, he's always been kind of tight about that. I tried to get his stuff when he quit, and he wouldn't give it to me. But anyways, Paul is back this week with his series for returning players to RuneScape. This week he's discussing combat, and in particular the evolution of combat and how to use it in a quick 4 minutes. This could perhaps be the best 4 minutes of combat primer that you've watched since returning to RuneScape. It will truly make you understand everything that you need to know about the evolution of combat. And of course, if you have more questions, you can just ask us a question on the podcast here. Anyways, off to Paul.
Hello, this is SilverWiz9, or PFK99s from RSBNB. This is the returning member series for returning players, and we focus on changes that have occurred in the past 5 or so years that old players aren't familiar with and new players probably haven't heard of anyway. So last week we looked at the treasure hunter minigame thing, and this week we're going to take a look at combat. Combat is a huge portion of RuneScape for a lot of players, unless you're a pure skiller. But if you're not, you're going to notice everything's different, except it's not that different. The evolution of combat was introduced to change the combat styles, the combat triangle, rather, to be no longer weighted towards melee. Melee previously could decimate just about every combat style out there, just wearing the correct gear. Nowadays, it is a little bit more balanced. So, without further ado, let's take a look how different it is. Okay, I'm going to attack Svetlana. Oh, and she's going down with range, just kind of like before. Maybe I'm not doing it right. Let's try out Yuri. Well, he's getting damaged. It's not too hard. I just clicked on him. Well, that goes to show you, they're pretty much the same. What is different is this menu, which apparently I can't access from my combat. I'm still in combat. Oh, geez. There are 4 major types. There's full manual mode, where you have to trigger all of your abilities manually. The revolution mode, which will attack, which will most emulate legacy. It should automatically use your abilities as available, as long as you put them in the correct spot in your action bar. And momentum is supposed to increase the damage of your auto attacks, but I don't find that super useful in my circumstance. Legacy is the old style, so if you really cannot stand it, which I implore you to at least try, it's available. So, this new EOC update introduced a hotbar. The hotbar allows quick access to abilities, prayers, potions, food, if you have it in the correct position. So take a look at it. It is very quick to learn. All you have to do is open your combat area, drag them over for ranged, magic, or melee, depending on what combat style you're going to be doing, and start using it. So let's take a look at magic instead. If I switch my hotbar to 3, I will get my magic spells. And I can see all the magic abilities. One major change is that magic spells no longer require runes, sort of. They don't require chaos, death, blood, etc., at least in the normal magic book that they used to, at least not for the major attacks. So if you want to train just using air surge or any air-based spell, you can do that. As long as you have an air staff, it's completely free. All you have to do is cast auto-cast, I guess. Oh, I actually just removed it in that case. And then attack, and you will automatically begin killing them with magic and gain experience in magic without really putting any money in, which I think is awesome. You can also use your hotbar to automatically use attacks, which is awesome. I cannot stress that enough. It is so much faster than it used to be. In my case, I like the Saruman Godsword, and that restores prayer and HP when you use the special attack. The special attack is now relegated to this bar, which is called the Adrenaline Bar. As long as you're attacking stuff, you will gain adrenaline. And once you get 100, or in my case 50, I can use it. It acts exactly like a special attack used to, except that I have to manually trigger it. I suppose I could remove it to a lower position on my hotbar, but I don't really want to do that. In any case, I would highly recommend taking a look at the new combat system. It is very fast, very worthwhile, and I think you will like it as soon as you start to use it. So thanks again. I am SilverWiz9 or PFK99s from RSBNB. See you next week.
Well, thank you, Paul, for that. Hopefully everybody has enjoyed that, and if you want to see the video version of that, once again, that's available on the YouTube channel at youtube.com/RSBNBstaff. We're moving on to questions. We've got a bunch of them this week, don't we?
Yeah, finally. Paul's done talking, stealing my thunder.
All right, first one's an audio question from Parnassius.
G'day, hosts, and a belated congrats on reaching the 500th episode a few weeks ago. Also, welcome aboard to Earth. It'll be interesting to see how soon Shane gets sick of using his beeper and just lets the podcast get the explicit tag. Anyway, on with my question for this week. I was discussing combat using Mage with another player a few days ago, and they claimed that it doesn't actually matter which spell you use, as long as the highest tier weapon is equipped when using abilities. His claim was that having Fire Strike activated gave exactly the same damage as Fire Surge when the actual abilities hit. This seemed a little off to me, but I just wasn't sure. Have you heard of this, or was he just full of it? I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, and all the best in your adventures on Gillinor.
Thank you, Parnassius. You want me to elaborate on this?
Yeah, you seem to know about it, and I don't. So
yeah, okay,
I'll let
so
you take this.
The way it's worked since the Evolution of Combat came out, and I am 90% sure this is still the way it works, is that when you equip a weapon, whether it be a magic staff or a Drygor melee weapon, there's two ways your damage is calculated. The first way is that your damage is calculated based on the damage value of the weapon, in the case of a melee weapon, or in the case of a magic spell, it's the actual spell itself. Now, that is physical damage that you do with your auto-attacking bonus. Now, when you are looking in terms of the combat abilities are tweaked in a slightly different way. It depends whether or not you're using a fast weapon or a faster weapon or an average speed weapon. Those are the three speeds of weapons that you can have. And then there's certain multipliers that come into play depending on how much of that damage value of your weapon carries over to the combat abilities. Now, in addition to the damage that you do with auto attacks, you have the ability damage. And yes, the ability damage is governed by the spell that you're casting. Just the same way it's governed by how much damage modifier you do have on your Drygor weapon or Dragon Longsword, whichever it might be. So I want to say that the person you were talking to was wrong. And Reed, I got this reversed in pre-show, but we're correcting it now, so that's okay. Because I was actually doing some math on this about a week ago, and I got probably about halfway through my calculations. I didn't complete the full set of calculations. Basically, what I was trying to do is I was trying to get the bases down for a RS3 max hit formula. But that hasn't happened yet.
All right.
But yes, ability damage is affected by the damage modifier of the weapon or the spell that you're using. Because if you think about it, if you look at, say, a Zaro staff or a Staff of Light, it doesn't have a damage multiplier on it. So how is that going to, you know, govern the amount of damage that you're doing, right?
So his friend was wrong?
Yes, I would assume that. Okay. Like I said, I'm 90% sure on this, based on logic of how the other combat styles work. It would be safe to assume magic works the same way. Now, with that being said, going from a strike to a surge, you will definitely see an increase in the amount of damage that you do. Say, fire strike to fire surge. But there's one caveat here that lots of people don't know. Right now, damage currently maxes out at the level of equipment that you are using. So, if you're using a level 75 magic staff, you're not going to get much benefit past going fire wave, because fire wave is 75 and fire surge is 95, and you're not going to get much benefit from using fire surge over fire wave. So if you're using a lower level magic staff, try to keep your spell to around that level as well.
All right.
And that's just a bit of combat. We could go into a whole lot more of the mechanics, but we won't do that until I have more of the numbers. Anyways.
That's more than I know. So
yeah. And that's...
I trust you, but if you're wrong, I will, of course, blame you entirely.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure if I'm wrong about that, we'll hear it. And I'm fairly certain that's the way it works. And with regard to what we were talking about earlier in response to combat, the more you know, the better you're going to do in combat, the better you're going to be able to advance your game. So this is just one of those tidbits that you can employ to be more efficient.
Woo!
Thank you, Parnassius. Alrighty.
Alright.
Next one from Lord Rickles.
I will read this one. Hey guys, with Valentine's Day being this weekend, if you could date any NPC in RS, who would it be and why? I, personally, have always been a fan of Linza. She's a hottie who is very good with her hands. Yeah. Anyhow, as always, thanks for the great show. And that is from Lord Rickles.
You can see NPCs doing things with their hands these days.
I don't know, Shane.
I don't know. We'll have to ask Lord Rickles about that. I don't really have an answer for this one.
Why not, Shane?
It's just not something that I think of when it comes to playing RS. I don't know about everyone else out there.
So, you've never been... just walking along in Gillinor, and you pass this female NPC, and you're like, whoa, look at those bazongas right there. Wow, those are nice. This is just an NPC, but those are still nice bazongas. Or something to that effect? That's never happened?
I knew you were going there. I don't think that this is something that Jagex ought to be innovating on. In that way, because it's
cheating on breasts, Shane.
No, the graphical appearance, absolutely not.
Of what?
I just don't think it's a
graphical appearance of what?
I don't think it's needed, and I think
breasts?
It's something. Yes,
graphical appearance of breasts.
I don't think it's needed, and I think it's something that they're doing to cater to their audience of young teenagers that I personally disagree with.
What exactly do you personally disagree with?
Revealing clothing on female NPCs.
Oh, come on, Shane. Everybody likes some bazongas.
I mean, the reworked Commander Zilyana was welcome because it made Commander Zilyana less revealing. And I always thought that NPC was pushing it. So...
Shane, what's the pixel count? Like 5 or some polygon count? It's like 5 in RS, isn't it? Come on.
It's more than 5, but...
All right, 10.
I abstain from answering this question.
You abstain from answering this question. Oh, Shane.
You can answer it.
I don't know. Ariane's all right.
She's the one from the Room Mysteries quest.
of Stone, yeah. She's all right, but she's also clearly catering. So that's kind of
it. I don't think I've seen her at any dinner parties or anything.
I don't get it.
Catering dinner parties?
I don't get it.
Oh. Alrighty then.
But, I don't know. There aren't any specifically. It's really more the other players, because they're given even more...
options.
Options. Yes.
Do you want to tell the story when this title came into your head after that one show last year with your roommates?
Oh, do you want me to tell the story?
Well, so if you could do it in under 30 seconds.
Okay, I logged in to RS, and you know, your camera is what, facing north?
Yeah.
And my camera just so happened to be centered directly on the chest of a female player in the game with very large bazongas, as Shane would say. So,
as you would say.
Yeah, anyways. That's where that came from. And I was just like, wow, look at those bazongas. And Shane was uncomfortable. But yeah, that's it.
Alrighty. Thank you, Lord Rickles. And hopefully, in the absence of an answer, I provided some justification for that.
I turned the volume down. I hope you didn't say anything fun.
No. No,
you're no fun. I forgot.
Alrighty, this next one is from Colton. Good and fair hosties, given the recent raccoon meat incident here in the U.S., what's been the strangest thing that you've ever eaten? As a child, my parents would take me to Purdue's Agricultural College, to what Purdue's Agricultural College calls the Bug Bowl, where the entomology department is front and center. They even provided some of the food. Being a young lad fond of sweets, I saw chocolate when my father handed me a toothpick with something skewered on the end. Although it was more crunchy than chocolate, it took me years to finally learn that my annual fare was a chocolate-covered cricket. Yum. Hope you guys have a nice Valentine's Day.
Well, have you heard about the raccoon meat incident?
No, I have not.
I have not either.
Let's see what that's about. I mean,
yeah.
We live in the city and, you know, we don't exactly get our fair share of exotic food around here. So I'm not entirely sure about what would be considered exotic. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I don't eat anything exotic. I try to stay far away from those sorts of things. So.
I mean, I've never gone for sushi or anything like that. I've had some interesting Chinese soups once or twice. They were very bitter and salty. That's about it. But I wouldn't call that exotic.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah, sorry about that. Apparently there's a there was a supermarket in LA that was selling raccoon meat, and now they're under investigation.
Well done, all.
Yeah, dead raccoons. Apparently we're in the frozen meat section.
And this was in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Shit, that sounds like something we'd do back in Tennessee or over in Alabama or Mississippi. Like, really, bring your own roadkill. It's a thing.
And to be fair, you're not dissing on the South or anything because you actually live there. In case
no, it's something that happens. You kill a deer, people will eat it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that makes complete sense. Otherwise, it's being wasteful, right?
Exactly.
I'm trying to think of something. What's the weirdest thing I've ever eaten?
I got nothing.
Yeah, same. We're very, I'm much like Rita's. I typically only stick with foods that I know, and I mean, I have to know exactly what's in something if I'm going to eat it. It's just something I like to know.
Yeah. No.
Sorry,
you should read. Yeah, sorry. And you have a good Valentine's Day, too.
Mm-hmm.
You should read this next one, and I will read Brian's.
Alrighty. Hey, hosts. I've recently been doing Dungeoneering completely solo because I don't have any friends who still play RS, and I was wondering if you have any tips for finding a team and what is different about a team floor. Unfortunately, I didn't get around to asking this before Trekkie left, but I hope that you can shed a little light on the subject. Thanks and keep up the good show from Barrage Tank or Optimaniac on the forums.
Shane, this is all you. I've Dungeoneer solo.
Now, according to your forum signature, you're level 98 Dungeoneering, which is good. Basically, what you want to do is, whenever you reset, rush your first 30 floors, 1 to 30, on C1 smalls, and then after that, start doing five-man groups. In order to get these groups, there's a couple of ways you can go about that. The easiest way, being level 98 Dungeoneering, is just use World 77. That's still the main Dungeoneering world, and for level 98, you'll fit right in there. Just go for a pug and ask them which floor you're doing and join in on a floor you can do. It's really good now because you don't necessarily need to do floors in order. If the floor is unlocked, you can do it and then find somebody else who's doing a different floor if you need to do that. Another option is to head on to the forums and look for people who are, you know, running a Dungeoneering friends chat at a certain level. The only thing you need to be wary of is people paying, you know, for scam floors and rushing and that kind of stuff. So just use your common sense when that kind of stuff comes around. But World 77 will be good. And in general, for everybody else out there listening, on the World Selection page, there's a list of Dungeoneering worlds you can use. Just follow what the instructions say on the world. So if it's, you know, 1 to 70 Dungeoneering on that one, go to that world. If it's 70 to 99, go there. If it's 99 to 120, go to that world. But by far and large, 77 is good. And I should also add that after you clear your first 30 floors at around level 98, because your maximum floor will be level 48, because you divide it by 2, you can just head on over to 30 plus and run them on C6 large, complexity 6. And that's how you Dungeoneer.
Woo!
Thank you, Barrage Tank. Nice to see you back around RSBNB and the friends chat.
Yeah, always good to see old faces.
Yep.
So, and this last question is from Brian, who sucks. Shane, what's the best tea? Why is that your favorite? What do you think of tea bags? LOL. When you are out and you need a tea, Do you wait until you're home, or do you buy one while out? And that is from Brian.
I'd have to say my favorite teas in general are something that's a little bit vanilla flavory.
Tea Earl Grey hot.
Unfortunately, I'm not a fan of Earl Grey.
Captain Picard would be ashamed of you, Shane.
I know. I just don't
Your
like
disappointment.
The taste. You ever tried Earl Grey?
No.
You should.
Why?
Well, who knows? You might like it.
Everyone tells me that.
Well, I mean, it's a liquid. It's not going to hurt you, right? So
is mercury.
But that will hurt you.
Exactly.
Yes.
That was terrible logic, Shane. It's a liquid. It can't hurt you. Come on.
Alrighty. I'd say I have a close to favorites currently. I don't know if these people exist in the U.S., but here in Canada, there's a company called David's Tea, and they have a whole selection of them. You can go to any of their stores and, you know, smell the teas and whatnot. Sometimes they have free samples if that's your thing. One of them is called Cream Caramel Rooibos, which has a vanilla flavory to it, but I don't think there's actually any vanilla in it. Then there's one that's a pure vanilla rooibos with a hint of lavender in it. That's really good as well. And I tend to gravitate, I think, towards the rooibos teas just because they're not tea tasting and they don't have aftertastes or strong odors to them, except for the flavoring. And most of what these guys have are indeed natural flavoring. So that is why I like that flavor. And you know, there's a whole bunch of teas there. You can get teas that you can make into iced tea in the summer. You could get green teas, white teas, oolong teas, black tea, pretty much every kind of tea under the sun. There's a huge selection there.
Shane really likes his tea, everyone.
Yeah, it's good. And I mean, I've never tried Earl Grey from there, so maybe the Earl Grey that you get from there is different, so maybe that might be something to do at some point. I don't know. But anyways, yeah, tea is good.
All right. Honestly, I stopped listening, but are you done with that question?
I'm done.
All right.
Well,
I know that was just addressed to Shane, but all I drink is water, so... Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't answer the part of tea bags. But
why not?
Well, I mean, I was just talking about the actual tea itself right there, but...
well, that's part of the question. You need to answer that.
I use tea bags. I think the tea bags are a good way to go because they're disposable and you don't need to wipe out the metal tea steeping devices you can get because you can get, like... stainless steel devices where you put the tea leaves in it, then it goes in the water and you just reuse that. So, you know, you're not necessarily polluting the environment, but the way I see it, paper is paper in a paper tea bag won't leave any aftertaste. So that's the best way to go, I think. And if I'm out and I need a tea, I, you know, just go with what's at home because I have the selections I like and don't normally drink it during the day. So there's that as well. And one word of advice for anybody out there who is drinking tea or likes tea in general, you don't want to boil your water with tea. Because if you do that, you're essentially cooking the leaves and they will lose aspects of their taste and you won't be getting the true experience with it. So you do not want a rolling boil. Tea temperatures vary based on the type of tea. Like a green tea, you might only need 80 degrees Celsius water. Whereas with the tea that I drink, you want it just under boiling. So you got to keep that in mind when you're making your tea. Anyways, I'm done now. So it's not
excellent.
Bring water to a boil, put tea bag in, and be the end of the day. There's actually a bit of science to it.
Okay. So now I have an update for you all on the creepy doll. So I am at the Edgeville Monastery, and I'm using the Ruined Essence on Brother Celerity. Oh dear, I've read about this day, but I thought that it would not come within my lifetime. Brother Celerity produces a tiny box, which he seems hesitant to open. You must take this, I must take that. It is how it was written. Please, you must. And then I say, well, if I must. Brother Celerity hands you the box, from which you withdraw an odd doll. And that's it.
Huh. I
see. You shake the doll briefly, nothing seems to happen. Fascinating.
There's got to be a story about that. Get Clan Quest on
I don't
that.
Know. Given the tattered dress, ruined eye, and scent of decay, creepy is a bit generous as the examine info. I'm going to go find someone and harass them with this. So,
yeah, it's kind of like taking an archaeological dig to an expert, isn't it?
Not particularly. I'm just going to find Colton and freak him out.
Okay. Alrighty. If you guys would like to send questions in, a topic goes up on Mondays. Just head on over to update.rsbnb.com/ask or send audio questions to questions@rsbnb.com.
Woo!
Alright, moving into tech news for the week. U.S. carriers meet their voluntary deadline for unlocking mobile phones.
That was voluntary?
Yeah.
I thought it was forced.
Nope.
So they all willingly made it so that when your contract is up, you can get your phone off. You can kill that you can unlock your phone for free. They willingly
exactly.
did that?
Yeah.
The
and
hell?
You know why? Because it's a deal between all seven carriers. So whatever's good with the carriers, you know, is obviously good for them. They tend to work in monopolies like that. But this is a very good thing for you guys that, you know, if your contract is up, you can unlock. Here in Canada, we're lucky in that after 90 days after you purchase a phone, even if it's still on contract, you can ask it to be unlocked.
And do they have to?
You can pay a fee for it, and yes, they have to. Whereas if your contract is expired here and you want to have your phone unlocked, you can get it unlocked for free. So it in a way we're actually ahead of the US on this kind of thing, which is a little bit odd. But I mean let me get this straight. Before this, you guys, there was no, you know, guarantee that a carrier had to unlock your phone even if a contract was up.
Oh, that's lucky.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever unlocked a phone or had an unlocked device?
Never needed one.
Yeah, because you guys have been on AT&T for oh so long. And, I mean, the reason they did this is because the seven carriers are AT&T, Bluegrass Cellular, Cellcom, Sprint, T-Mobile, U.S. Cellular, and Verizon. And, you know, combining all those together, they cover 97% of U.S. wireless subscribers. So that is why they agreed to this deal. So, I mean, they're still working in their same monopoly way. But at the end of the day, this is something that is good for consumers. And that option, I think, should ultimately be there. So congratulations to you guys down there. And this provision was actually set up way back when in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act that prevented people from unlocking their phones because it was deemed as a hardware or software lock, and breaking those was breaking the DMCA.
Nope. Not anymore.
Nope. You gonna unlock yours?
I mean, I might, just so it can be unlocked, but I'm not gonna leave AT&T, because where am I gonna go, right?
Exactly, and I mean, I think the only reason to unlock if you're happy with your carrier is if you want to take your phone to a foreign country.
Yeah.
Because then you can just plop a SIM card in and off you go. You're off to the races in Canada or the Soviet Union or Ukraine or wherever.
Clearly.
Yes. And yes, I did say the Soviet Union there. I meant that. Alrighty. Next piece of tech news is that the Obama administration is creating a new agency to combat cyber attacks.
Oh, good.
Yeah, its mission will be to fuse intelligence from around the government, all the other agencies, and respond to cyber attacks. The spurring of this creation is, of course, you know, all the cyber attacks that happened in 2014. Sony, you know, North Korea attacking the U.S., various other intrusions
time.
And whatnot. Yes, yes. And, I mean, there was an interview with the top general in the U.S. a while back. And, you know, he said he can defend the U.S. homeland quite reasonably against a ground war. But he openly admitted that he was worried about defending the U.S. from cyber attacks. You know, cyber attacks we've seen so far have been simple. They've been breaches of passwords, breaches of exploits. Nothing specifically designed to cause trouble or, you know, hurt life. I mean, they've been stealing information. But if you think about it, cyber attacks that could ultimately happen, you know, could be into the electrical grid or nuclear power plants or banking institutions, Wall Street, that kind of thing, or even the worst of it, the U.S. military systems. So it is necessary to have something like this in this day and age. The question is, you know, what took so long? What took 15 years to get something in the modern world that, you know, where we actually are facing these threats and need to start getting ready for these now, when quite clearly other nations out there do have an edge on this and are probing, like China and Russia, for example. So it's welcome, but as with any more government institution, you're increasing the size of government, and whether or not that's a good thing and it works will be remain to be seen for this, as there's lots of other three-letter agencies that sometimes don't exactly accomplish what they're set out to. You have anything on this one?
Just, it's about damn time.
Yeah. And, I mean, imagine being able to point the finger officially at someone when the next Sony happens or something like that. And to be fair, it's something Sony really, you know, couldn't truly be ready for, because the provisions don't exist in law to go after this kind of crime, which
Hopefully
that'll come with this. I mean, Lizard Squad, for example, how are you supposed to prosecute that? A multinational group taking down the Xbox network. How is Microsoft supposed to recover from that? That is the problem with the internet. And maybe this is going a step
better than
in the direction to solve it.
Well, Microsoft did better than Sony did.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. Alrighty. Well, that's good. And last piece of tech news comes from today, when Apple's announced or confirmed that they are working on an electric car project with hundreds of employees working on research and development. Basically, Tim Cook's idea is that he wants to give Tesla a run for the money.
Oh, this is an electric car, not a self-driving car. Okay.
No. Yeah.
So they're not trying to compete with Google just yet.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a natural evolution of such a thing from Apple, right?
I guess.
So if they're competing
with
Tesla,
I'm not impressed.
And how much does a Tesla car cost? Aren't they upwards of $100,000?
I don't know.
But basically, if you can imagine...
Don't pay attention to electric cars.
Yeah, neither do I, which as you can tell here. But you can imagine Apple doing something like this, probably
the 2015 Tesla Model S 60 is $70,000. That appears to be the new entry model.
Wow. So I guess an Apple car would probably be around $100,000 then?
$200,000 if it's the same price as their computers. Or if it's the same, you know what I mean.
Yeah, if it's the same markup. And I mean...
So you admit it.
Yes. Well, I mean, you are paying for what you get. But the question is, when you're dealing with something that's almost as much as a house, will people go buy that?
Well,
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But, oh yeah. You know Silicon Valley needs more toys, right? Al Gore and company and Nancy Pelosi and everyone there need more toys. But I guess that's what people do when they want to burn some money. But I personally think gasoline is just fine.
Yep. Shane's loving the Alberta economy. He's really worried.
We won't talk about oil prices on this edition of the show, but anyways. Yes. Moving on to other things, including Skill of the Month. Jam Andy has pulled ahead and is currently in first place in the Skill of the Month, giving Tim a good run for his money.
Holy shit.
Ahead with 8.8 million XP gained, while Tim is in second with 7.5. Blatherskite is also up there in the top three with 7.2, so we actually do have quite a race going on here.
Wow, this isn't a, just a...
blowout.
Yeah. Excellent. I like it.
Question is, who runs out of money first?
Yep. Well, good luck all.
Yeah, we're draining the economy of money, and you know it might be a good time for a farming skill a month in a couple months, right? I'm kidding. I won't rig it.
He's not kidding. He's always rigging it. The only time you've rigged it is
when a new skill comes out, and we want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, every other time it's random. But, yeah, very interesting to see what's going on. So keep up the good work, everyone. Good job.
And achievements of the week. Barrage Tank got 99 Dungeoneering on February 12th, 2015. Imperialis got 99 Defense on February 12th, 2015. Silver Was 9, or Paul, got 99 Ranged on February 10th, 2015. Imperialis got 99 ranged on February 8th, 2015, and Jungle Biscui got 99 Dungeoneering on February 8th, 2015. So, congratulations, everyone.
Good job, all. Keep up the good work. Nice to see Dungeoneerings and ranged in there. Good.
Woo!
Do you want to talk about your event?
So next week, Old School RS is going free to play, and to celebrate this, the community ambassador team is, we are going to have an event celebrating this, and the details of the event are, we're still working on those, and we're still working on talking to some Old School communities. But stay tuned, and within the next few days, we will have more details for that up on our forums. So, yeah.
Alrighty. Should be interesting to see what happens with that.
Yeah.
Now, it's time for Pick of the Week. I'm going to go this week with the iOS and Mac application. probably most interesting the iOS side to people, since I don't know how many Mac users we have in this audience. But the application is called Notability. And the idea with this is that you can take notes with, you know, a pen or your finger and basically sketch them out as you normally do on a piece of paper. But Notability also has the ability to, you know, take PowerPoint slides or PDFs and mark them up. So if you're in school taking notes on an iPad, you load the PDF for PowerPoint, and then you can take notes and draw on it and whatnot. And if you have the Mac version, you can then have your notes on your computer and review them that way. So it can be done on both the Mac and the iOS platform. So the idea is take the notes on the iPad and review them on your Mac, if you have that. If not, you can just export them as a PDF and view them on your Windows computer, print them out, do whatever you need to do with them. This application is, I want to say $2.99 in the U.S. App Store and $3.49 here in Canada. So it's not free, but nonetheless, it's still very cheap and provides a great platform for taking notes if you want something that can draw and, you know, work with PDFs and PowerPoint or Keynote or whatever you want. So that's in the App Store, and it's called Notability. And that's a pick. So, what have you been up to this week?
You go first.
All right. This week on RS, starting to get ready for the bonus XP weekend coming up. I'm going to be doing summoning there. So, I think, either be going for Iron Titans or Pakyaks. It depends which secondary is cheaper, which one I want to do. Either get iron plate bodies or go for the pack yaks and just collect my own yak hide. But in addition to that, you know, just farming, keeping going on that front. And I could say that I've been inspired back into, you know, doing daily Queen Black Dragon runs for a bit, because in about half an hour or one Searing Overload flask, I earned about 1.1 million GP, so it's a pretty good moneymaker if you're medium to high level combat, nice and simple. Very little input costs go into it, so definitely check that out if you're of combat 80 plus or so. I mean, your combat stats are 80 plus. All right.
Woo! Well, this week has been an unexpectedly long week. I don't know why. I don't know. You all have probably been able to tell that I'm not feeling too great this week. Hopefully I'll be better next week. But just, I don't know. Tired. Hope I'm not getting sick. But,
well, we'll help you through that if that is indeed the case.
Yeah.
Anything on RS interesting aside from the doll?
Well, yeah, I got the creepy doll. Did I talk about what happened when you use it on someone?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Someone and found Colton and it just lifted him
up.
Oh
no, you.
Oh, I
oh,
didn't.
Yeah, you
oh,
didn't. You
okay.
Didn't.
Okay. See, not forget. Can't even speak, y'all. So I took the creepy doll. I went and found our very own Colton. Formerly known as 101 Duck One. I creeped and found him, and I used the doll, and it lifted him up in the air, and it did this weird animation thing. So, yeah, that's what it does.
And what quest was the kipple from again?
Oh, God, did I close that tab? I hope I didn't close that tab.
He was from the Elder Artifact one, wasn't he?
I think that's right.
Interesting. Interesting. Heart of Stone. Yes, that was the Elder one. Hmm. All right. Anything else before we wrap this up then?
Not really. Just been doing Slayer.
Oh, good. And that's... no amazing drops.
No, unfortunately. And Paul won't give me any of his.
Just like you can't get any of those Earth runes now, can you?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, well.
That's a topic for another day, but this has been RSBNB Update, and we will see you all back next week, so have a good week, everyone.
Hopefully I won't be under the weather next week. See you all.